Welcome back to episode 120 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to explore the highs of rating gain and the glory that comes with it, but we also dive into the plateaus and perhaps below that, the pits of despair. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys, and I do want to thank our queen level supporters, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Diana Rich Burgess, Brandon Halstead, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glau, and King level supporter Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, a great way to do this is to fill out the Google form in the show notes. We do all want to hear your story. Also, Twitter DMs are great as well. If you're interested in getting better at chess and you want to use Noel Studer's next level training program to do that, well, there's a code in the show notes. I win, you win, everyone wins. And now let's say you were listening to the show and you're like, you know, it's a great podcast. It's Chess Journeys. You could give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Now, if you're like, you know, it's a terrible show, Chess Journeys, you could just send me an email and tell me I'm terrible. Either one, up to you. All right. Well, let's get to the task at hand today. We have a very exciting episode for us. We have Dennis. He's an adult improver who did the impossible, climbing from 1800 to master as an adult. That's right. He fulfilled my dream. He fulfilled your dream. He is the savior we've been looking for. Dennis, how are you doing? Welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
I'm okay. I'm excited to be here. Have I had a chance to play chess today? I did. I played the student when I was teaching at a school, actually. There was a student who needed someone to play against, so I played a little bit against them.
Okay, very nice. Very nice. Playing against a student. And how are you when you play against students? Are you utterly merciless? Do you like, you know, play less than moves? What's your approach?
I play moves that I think are good. But, you know, I'll talk to the student about, you know, what I thought, like after the game ends, we can talk a little bit about what I thought went right or wrong for them. Usually I try to just give them constructive criticism. The main thing is if I'm in a situation like that, where I'm teaching at a school, which is a bit different from like a, you know, private lesson or whatever, if I'm just teaching within a group, then one of the main things is I want to make sure they have fun. So, you know, of course, just being encouraging and trying to make sure that the kid enjoyed it. That's obviously one of the priorities, but I usually try to play good moves, you know. I don't want to make any bad habits for myself when I'm playing against students.
Yeah, it's such an interesting thing about chess. Like I played a kid recently at our chess club. I'm a high school teacher, mm-hmm. and the student is not that experienced, and I crushed them, and that was expected, and he expected it. I expected it. We talked about it after the game, and I told my coworkers, and they were like, "You should have let it win." And I was like, "No, that's not how chess works. I'm not going to let some random kid win for no reason."
Yeah, sometimes you get people asking to go easy on it, and I kind of don't know what that means. Like I've never been somebody who likes to do that. But I mean, I will say, like sometimes when I'm playing kids, I'll switch up the openings I play, or I'll just I'll experiment around with something. Or if I know what they like to do, or I know what they're most comfortable with, I might do something specific to them to see, like give them a little test, or you know, just see how they react to certain things, because sometimes it can be useful for them. Because then after the game, we can go over it, and maybe it's something that they're not too familiar with. But, you know, everybody has a different approach. I'm not saying that what I do is what everybody else should do, but
yeah, that makes sense.
How I think about it.
That's what I do with my daughter, right? Like, it's not enjoyable for either of us for me to just crush her. So, like, I let her choose the opening, right? She's like, I play e4, and all my opponents play e5. Don't play your Caro Kann that I hate. Play e5, and I'm like, all right, I'm terrible at e5. That works great.
Yeah, you know, now that I think about it, something I have sometimes done is I'll have, like, you know, let's say I'm in a group or whatever, I might have another kid or somebody else play my first couple moves, and then at some point, like, you know, I give them like 5 moves or something, and so then they can kind of decide the opening, and they can kind of give me the territory that I'll be playing in, and then at that point, you know, I'll take over. That's something that sometimes I'll do.
I got terrible news, coach. I hung your queen. Good luck.
That can happen, actually. It's not my responsibility, though.
Yeah. Okay, so before we dive into what I think is going to be the main part of the episode, which is how does one obtain master as an adult, I do want to flash all the way back You know, when did you pick up chess? Did you play a lot as a kid? How far did you get as a kid? What's your story look like?
I first learned the rules of chess when I was, I guess, 9 years old. So I would have been in fourth grade. I remember when it happened. Basically, the situation was that for some reason, I mean, I learned at school, but it wasn't part of the curriculum or anything. For some reason, my class was just ahead of the other group by one day's worth of instruction in the curriculum. And the teachers decided the solution to that was, let's have them waste a day and we'll teach them chess.
Wow.
And you had the one kid in the group who like already knew and was, I guess, scholars meeting people and running around, and everybody else is like, okay, you know, how do I move this? What is this thing called? For whatever reason, I kind of enjoyed it pretty quickly, but I didn't really play a lot until I was well into high school. I played a few tournaments in middle school. I played my first tournament when I was 12, and I played a couple. Okay. But not a whole lot. I took a decent period of time away from the game somewhat when I was early in high school. And I was under 1,000. I mean, I was 900 something or other. And actually, I know exactly what it was. I think I was 962. And I didn't play any tournaments for over a year, and just wasn't really super into the game. Partially because just starting out high school, there's just so many things happening, and chess just happened to be the one that kind of fell by the wayside for a bit. Yeah. And then in the summer before my sophomore year of high school, I randomly just decided that I wanted to play in the Atlantic Open that year, which was always right before the school year. So it was always like the last weekend of summer, you know. And I played in under 1,000 section, and I did quite well. And I remember all those games like it was yesterday, and it was 10 years ago, or more, it was more than 10 years ago, but I remember, like, you know, each one of those games. And I did quite well. I narrowly didn't win money, but I got over 1,000, and I had a lot of fun. And then that single tournament kind of inspired me, like, okay, I actually want to start playing this game. That's and taking it kind of seriously.
All right, let me ask you about that tournament. Like, did you prep at all for that tournament, or was just this like, I remember chess was fun?
No, so this. I had played some chess just sort of for fun a bit during the summer. Like, for example, during the summer, I had like a camp or a program that I would go to, like CTYF, if any of the listeners know. And there were some kids who played chess there. I played a bit with them, and I was like, okay, you know, this, I kind of remember that this thing was a bit fun. You know, I did this in middle school, and I wasn't bad. Like, I was already 900 or so, but I hadn't studied or anything in well over a year. I hadn't really been putting much of any effort into it. And I think that was one of the things that kind of pushed me to consider playing a tournament. And then just randomly, I think maybe my mother or somebody was like on the email list or something from having played tournaments 2 or 3 years prior, and just I was like, okay, you know, I want to play in this tournament, and it went pretty well. I mean, I didn't win the section or anything, but that kind of made me want to start taking chess more seriously.
Yeah, and that positive feedback loop can be so alluring. I know for my 8 year old, it was like, was kind of struggling at her local club, went to a Scholastic tournament, doubled their rating, and then she was like, ooh, I want to do another one, then gained like another 150 points. And so it's like that loop was like, oh, it feels so great.
Doubling your rating. I want to be like a, you know, 4,000, 5,000 player. That'd be cool.
I know. I would love to double my rating.
It was a nice experience. There was kind of like an innocence to it too, because You're just playing, you're just having fun. Like, I there wasn't any grand goal that I had at that time. I'm just like, okay, I'm here because I want to be here.
Yeah. Sounds low pressure, low stakes, just having a good time.
Yeah. And I had had before when I was in middle school, I'd had a couple lessons with a chess coach in my area, who was a great chess coach. His name is Jason McKinney. And so after I had that tournament, the Atlantic Open, I started taking lessons from him again. And at some point, late in that year. So that's late 2013. I'm 15. And I'm still, and I played another couple of tournaments. I'm like in the high of thousands. And he asked me just randomly, I'm in the basement in the middle of a chess lesson, and just asked me like, okay, so Dennis, what's your goal? Like, do you have one? Just, yeah, you know, what do you want to accomplish in chess? I hadn't really thought of that before. And I kind of thought, you know, maybe a reasonable goal for me would be to get the national master title. Like, maybe that's possible, because I really am liking this game. It's I'm enjoying playing these tournaments and things. And Jason kind of looked up at me and he just said, that's going to be really hard. He didn't add a qualifier to that. He didn't say that's going to be really hard, but he just said that. And he was right. Totally. He was a great coach. Yeah. But we can do hard things sometimes, you know, it was kind of a cool moment, because I think after I said that, I didn't really know exactly what I was saying. Like, I knew that the title existed, but I didn't really know that moment would be something that I would remember and that would really become my goal. But I always would think back to kind of that moment later, sometimes like, okay, that's when I decided that I wanted to get to that rating level. Cause you know, sometimes people start out and they want to become a grandmaster or something. They have such high ambitions. It kind of worked out that was a reasonable goal. It was a very difficult one, but it also was achievable, which is, I mean, I guess I'm lucky, but that my goal happened to be like that, but that's how it worked out. So that's when I first started thinking about that. My rating was, you know, close to 1100 at that time.
Oh my, I have a question though. Do you feel like that goal was limiting at all? Like, what if you had said FM?
Yeah, I don't know what would have happened if I had said FM. I do think that it worked out in a way, because it's a lot easier to focus on USCF rating, like, especially if you're like that level. It's hard to even think about FIDE. Like, I obviously I didn't play any FIDE tournaments at that point, and it would be a while before I would. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think that's like a lot of people probably, they think about making NM first, and then they get there and then they look around and then they decide, okay, what's the next thing that I'm interested in going for? I always thought that would be sort of what I would be like. I would try to get the 2200 and then I would think about it. As I got closer, as I had more years of sort of experience and I realized what it would take, I kind of thought, you know, once I get to 2200, I feel like that's going to be the only big chess goal that I'm going to set. I mean, not that I'll not try to get better ever again, but I have a commitment to this goal. And then if I want to play chess after that, it's going to be because I want to play, because I want to have fun or whatever. Right. And I'm happy that I kind of thought that, because there's a thrill in pursuing a goal, but it's also nice to just have fun, you know, and to have gotten to the place that you've gotten to, and not to have something always in the back of your mind asking you what's the next thing constantly.
It's also nice because it sounds like you can actually more easily celebrate that goal than, like, if your goal had been GM when you hit master, you're like, whatever, that's not even close to my goal.
I mean I had enough perspective at least to realize that I probably wasn't going to be a GM if I broke 1000 when I was almost 15 years old. You know, I had enough perspective at least, you know, at least to realize that. And that's something, by the way, that, I mean, I teach chess to a lot of kids, and not the only people I work with. I mean, I've taught people of varying ages, but a lot of the students I work with, I remind them, like, you guys, for the most part, you know, a lot of you guys are way stronger than I was when I was your age. Mm. A lot of times it's not even close. I'm talking to somebody who's like 8 years old, that you know how to move the pieces. Great. You're better than I was. I didn't know how to move the pieces. Yeah. I'm talking to somebody who's, and there's so much comparing one person comparing to another that happens in chess. You gotta, you know, people looking over their shoulders, looking at the progress of other people. In the grand scheme of things, so many of the students I'm working with, they're just in great shape. If they want to achieve something great in chess, they can do it. Like, I know, because I did, and I was way behind where they were. And, but you know, you get a lot of perspective over time. Like, there are so many moments when I questioned one way or another how strong I could ultimately become. And now it's kind of interesting because I can look back and I can talk to my students about, like, you know, you're in great shape. These are some of the things you might need to do to get better. This is the, like, you don't need to stress out about all the little stuff. Like, there's a big picture and eventually it'll come together, you know?
Yeah. it's an interesting question of, like, having to want it, right? So, like, my 8-year-old child started when she was like 6, and I could tell she had a lot of talent. And it's just kind of like, what do you want out of this journey, right? And at first she was like, I want to be master. And I was like, okay, are you sure? I was like, it takes a lot. And she's like, actually, no, I just want to play some here and there. And I was like, okay, that's cool too. And so it's that interesting thing where I'm kind of like lurking in the background, like, hey, if you want to do this, if you want to really go for it, I'm here to help. Yeah. So not on the table just yet.
It's also another thing worth noting, I guess, that I kind of chose chess when I was like well into my teenage years. Mm-hmm. My parents had nothing to do with that. My parents let me do what I, and they were great chess parents in the sense that they were very hands off, but they were supportive. So if I had ever wanted to stop playing chess, they would have been fine with that. If I'd ever wanted to pursue something else, they would have been fine with that too. They were supportive of me playing chess. I was playing chess for me. They didn't ask me, they didn't try to analyze my games with me. I mean, they know how the pieces move. That's it. They barely know anything about chess other than that. But they didn't put pressure on me. They didn't criticize me when I did badly. And I have to really thank them for all the things that they did. Because, you know, when you're really getting into it as a teenager, late teenager, that's a time you're thinking about colleges. You're thinking about other direction in your life. I had to make some sacrifices to play a lot of chess. Like there were things that I quit to play chess. Like I was on the sailing team for my school because I went to high school in Annapolis. I enjoyed sailing. I was disastrous at it. It was a lot of fun. I was.
Did you crash any boats?
Well, we definitely capsized and turtled quite a bit. Especially we capsized plenty of times, and I was definitely not one of the. I mean, I don't think I'll put it this way. When I quit the team, obviously they weren't happy that I was quitting, in a sense that, you know, they got along with me fine, but mm-hmm. I definitely didn't put them in any competitive jeopardy. That's for sure. But that, like, I had to make some sacrifices, and my parents were for that in a way, because they wanted to let me choose the way that the mm-hmm. direction I wanted to go. There are some times where I see kids where it doesn't necessarily feel like they get that choice, because it's like such a young age, something gets chosen for them. And so that's something I'll always be super thankful to my parents. Because sometimes I've had this conversation, like, with my mother will say, well, what if we got you into chess when at younger age, you could have been a stronger player. And on one hand, there's a truth to that. On the other hand, I don't regret that at all, because I got to sort of choose it, you know?
Yeah.
There's a difference there. I don't know. I think that's something.
It's really tough as a parent, because I'm trying to take that approach as well. Like, my daughter leads her chess journey, and I'm like, what if I let it? Like, she would probably be a lot better. Now, she might not be as happy as a child, and that's what I'm prioritizing. But who knows, maybe 20 years from now, she'll be all upset with me, right? Like, if you had just driven me, I could have been a contender.
Yeah, no, I'm very thankful to my parents, because they were helpful, but also they let me choose, you know, the path. Yeah.
It's always entertaining. I'm sure you see this at, like, kids' tournaments, where a kid will come out and you can tell a parent has no idea really what they're doing, but they put the game into the computer and they can just be like, why didn't you do that? Look, the computer says just go there.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's crazy. I mean, sometimes the parents is very critical of the kid, and I just know that the kid is way stronger than the parent. I just know that the parent is, you know, like, is not a chess coach or anything. They're just trying to be a parent. They're trying to, they're trying to criticize their kid. And the thing is, the other thing is that the kid, every chess player needs to lose so many games and needs to have so many disasters happen to them to improve. You don't need to be mad at somebody for having the disaster. That's just part of the journey.
Yeah.
That was something that I think helped me. I mean, all the times when I had various disasters happen to me in chess, the only person who was ever mad at myself was me. And I would be very, and I mean, we could talk about this later, I'm sure. Confidence and mentality, those things can be tough. But nobody else put any pressure on me to have results in chess ever. Yeah, not even for a moment. And I'm happy about that, because I think that, I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for some kids or some people to play and feel like they're afraid to do something. They're afraid to get something wrong, or afraid to play a bad move, because they're going to hear it when they get home. I never had that. And I'm very thankful about that too.
Yeah, I try to use my chess experience to just play the cheerleader role. Like, whenever anything bad happens, I'll be like, yep, that's happened to me too. I hear you. So annoying. But I never layer on the criticism that I'm just like, I'm with you. That happened to me last week, actually. And I'm like 1,000 points higher rated than you. So bad news is going to keep happening.
Yeah, you never stop losing in frustrating ways. It's crazy. You know?
that's the weirdest thing about chess. You would think you would get to a point where you're like, I just don't blunder anymore. And then you watch, you know, super GMs play each other and blunder, and you're like, what? How?
Yeah. No matter how strong you are, you're always going to have games where you're really mad at yourself. Just the types of blunders that you'll make change a bit, but it's always going to happen.
Okay. So let's see. Where were we? We were high school. You're like 1300, I think you said. You're making the commitment to master already?
Yeah. The next thing that happened was I basically went from about 1,000 to 1,800, like with almost no bumps in the road. I mean, it happened in a year and a half or less than that. I mean, it was a very quick trajectory, and it was so quick that it hurt me later, and I'll explain why. But I had like a group of my friends who were in chess, like on chess.com. Like, we had a group and we would post all the time. We'd be talking about tournaments we'd be playing in. And I would, when I was playing in a tournament, like let's say I was about to play in a tournament that weekend, and this is when I'm like 16 years old, you know, I'm posting in that the forums of my little group, and I'm saying, I'm gonna break 1400 this weekend. I'm 13, whatever, and I know like my rating's just going up. Yeah. And I would be right every time. I'm gonna break 1400 this weekend. It happened. I'm gonna break 15. And it was, wow. I mean, you can take a look at my graph. It was very quick from 1000 to 1800. Everybody has a point that they can get to quickly, and then everybody has some point that it's very difficult to get through. I would never judge anybody for where the difficult point is. For me, it turned out to be 1800. For somebody else, it could be 1,000. For somebody else, it could be 2,000 or 2,200 or whatever. Everybody's journey is different. I got to 1800. I mean, I was doing a lot of chess. I'm not saying it was no effort. It was a ton of effort, but it was very quick. And I thought, man, this thing is easy. Like, this is crazy. Like, I'll be master next year or something. Maybe I need a new coach because I'll be better than this one soon. Like, I had everything. And I was so wrong. And I knew I was wrong when I played in the 2015 Philadelphia Open. And I go in and play in that tournament. And that was the first really huge Open tournament that I ever played. Like, really big. It was bigger than the Atlantic Open. And it was a bit of a, relatively compared to what I've been doing, is a bit of a journey for me, because I'm from Maryland. It's not a huge journey to go to Philadelphia, but I'd never really gone far. I'd always just been playing things, you know, in Baltimore, I think, like, and I was like, cool, I'm gonna play in this tournament. This, everything's going great. Play under 2000 section. And first
of all,
did you
make any announcements about what rating you're gonna achieve after this tournament?
No, because I was in the low 1800s, so it would be tough to get to a new, you know, spot. But I was playing in the under 2000 section of the Philadelphia Open, and something that's become common lately is that you play your section, you face people who are playing up all the time.
Yeah.
That happened to me in that tournament. I lost my first 5 games.
Oh, wow.
And I was playing lower rated people in all these games, and I'm getting destroyed, and I'm playing like garbage. And every round, I can't believe what's happening, because I'm seeing these opponents, and it's a different type of person. I mean, some of them are kids. One of them was so young that some of the turns he would spend like 10 minutes, he's not even looking at the board, he's looking at the ceiling, and he crushed me. And it was like, I couldn't believe it. It was the most frustrating tournament. And I had a whole new realization, like, man, this thing is actually really difficult, because that was a big tournament. And I got to look around and see, there are so many people just like me who are trying to improve at chess, and I have to face them. And we both can't gain a ton of points from this game.
Nope.
And that hit me so hard. I lost 65 points in that tournament.
Did you consider quitting at all?
Not at that moment, no, but I mean, I had moments at various points when I did, but like at that tournament, I was just trying to win a game. And eventually on the last day, I won one game and I was very happy. And my opponent, the funny thing is my opponent in that game was a very young kid who later also became a master. And way later we had a conversation about that game.
Oh,
and
it was funny because
we both remembered it. And he told me, he was like, I was looking at that your results that you were having up until that point in the tournament. I was like, man, this guy's just doing terrible. I've got to beat him. And then I lost. I was like, we're both having a tough tournament, you know?
Yeah. But let's talk real quick about those glory days from 1,000 to 1,800.
Yeah.
What did you do during that stretch?
So one thing which I've always done, like in times when it's been tough or times when like during that time when I was just gaining a ton of points, I always made a big point to analyze the heck out of my games. That was like my number one priority. And I would annotate my own games heavily. I'd look at them with my coach. And then I'd post them like to my friends. My friends would see them. I'd be analyzing their game. I'm just doing so much chess. And I mean, I was not a little kid by any stretch. I mean, I was already close to the age where I could drive to tournaments. I wasn't quite doing that yet, but like I was a teenager, but I still had some of that, you know, that magic, I guess, where I just doing a ton of chess, it helped me just get better at that time. Mm-hmm. And I was surrounded, like I got to know a lot of players, a lot of other kids who were playing chess, and we would just do random stuff, you know, on chess.com or whatever. We would just analyze each other's games. I would play a lot online and I would ask my coach questions. There wasn't a lot of structure. There was really no structure. I didn't have to think about structure because everything was happening easily. Like I didn't have to think about that till way later.
You're just having fun doing chess stuff.
Just having fun doing chess and improving at chess like a kid. And then at some point once, cool. But the thing is it runs out at some point. It doesn't keep going forever.
Okay. So what's so fascinating about this, I'm looking at your graph and I didn't make this connection until just now. We have almost an identical journey in that I went from 1,000 to 1,700 in about a year and a half. Mm-hmm. I was working hard. I was more structured. I was in my early 20s. But my goal was not master. My goal was GM. And when I had that bad tournament where I lost 80 points, I realized like, oh, wow. In order for me to achieve my goal, it's nearly impossible because these people are so good and the success that I was having was so easy. I mean, I was working hard, but it came so quickly that I just quit entirely and was like, I'm going to go off to grad school. I don't have time to achieve this impossible goal. Yeah. I'll tackle this at some point in the future. So it's like, I think my impossible goal was a detriment to me that it led me to just realize that I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that my goal happened to be something that was like, is difficult, but I could see that it was possible and I wasn't going to let go of it. I mean, there were times when I sort of thought about letting go of it, but then, you know, I never could get myself to quite do it. I definitely thought though that there was a period of time when I did become quite pessimistic about it, especially like 2016 or so when I'm ending high school. I'm you know, turning 18 years old, I'm going to college and I'm realizing, especially when I start college and I look around, I'm realizing like, you know, there are other chess players here, but they're not interested in playing a lot of tournaments here. Like they're going to do their stuff. They're like, and I was 1800 and I've been 1800 for a while at that point. And I'm sort of thinking, okay, you know what, maybe that's sort of my fate for a while.
Yeah.
And that kind of made me a bit pessimistic, just because I sort of thought maybe there's a real world type problem here where I'm just going to have to give up, and focus on other things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a universe that we have a lot of parallel universes or something. There's one where I made that choice and who knows, we could compare that Dennis with the Dennis that we have here and I can figure out what would have happened.
In that universe, you created the ability for us to colonize Mars. So, I mean.
Okay. So I guess I missed out on something. Okay. But at least in this one, I got like a chess title. So
yeah, this one's better. That's what I'm saying. This is the better universe. All right. So you hit 1800. It sounds like you're stuck there for a bit. Are you still doing the approach of like, chess is pretty easy, I'm just having fun with it? Or do you start to think like, okay, I need to do something different to break through?
Yeah, I mean, clearly it wasn't easy to break through. It became very apparent at some point in, I don't know, late 2015, early 2016, that any type of magic that I have is totally gone, because like, it's been, you know, it's been a year and I've been stuck at this rating, and based on my previous trajectory, I'd be like 2300 by now. Like, what's going on, you know? So it was very apparent that whatever I was doing was not going to work beyond the point that I had gotten to. And there were a lot of things that I thought all the time. And there were some things I did that were definitely damaging to myself. Like, for example, I was a player who switched around openings I was playing all the time. Because typically I was watching YouTube videos all the time. I was looking at databases all the time, and I was always seeing new ideas. And like, okay, cool. I'll try that, because what I've been doing hasn't been working. I would try it. It wouldn't work for me either. And then I would think, okay, well, it didn't work. So that was a bad opening. So I got to try something else.
Yeah. It's always the opening's fault when you lose.
Yeah. And something that I understand now is like, you know, any of those things could have been fine for me, but I didn't have the patience to get to know them deeply. And any time that you're talking to a really strong player has a very good understanding of a certain position, and any title player will have some openings there where they have a very deep understanding. They could just give an hour lecture without any preparation.
Yeah.
If you want to get to that level, you have to play a lot. You have to lose a lot. You have to analyze your own games a lot in that opening over a long period of time. And you have to have patience. And I didn't have patience because I was used to gaining a million points, you know, a minute. And that hurt me. So I'm switching from thing to thing. Eventually, you know, way later when I started teaching chess, that probably helped me in a way, because I'm kind of conversant in many different openings.
I haven't
tried them. But as a player, it was not helpful. I mean, it was too much. I'm not saying that you should never change openings, but I'm saying that if you are switching like every month some new thing that you're doing, that's probably, you're just never going to be able to master any of them. And it was very, very detrimental, I think. That's one thing, because I was constantly frustrated about that.
I went through that period myself with my white opening. Like, for 3 months, every time I lost, I would message my coach and be like, I think it's time for an opening change. And finally, I had Noel Studer on the podcast, and he's like, all right, the next time you win with it, just write down my opening's fine. Like, and then whenever you think, because you lost, it's the opening's fault, just look at the post-it that you wrote and signed that said, your opening's fine, improve the other parts of your game. And actually, since then, I haven't had those doubts as much. I still lose my opening and go, okay, probably not the opening's fault. And I just move on. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely blamed a lot of results on openings that were not on openings. It was because I didn't know what I was doing, but I blamed them on the opening because that's what I thought. That's one thing. And something also I think is very important that is relevant to my story is like, that did a number on the confidence.
Yeah.
When I was used to gaining a million points all the time, and then I've been stuck at a 1800 rating, and a lot of my friends, by the way, in chess were younger than me. I mean, I knew a lot of the other Scholastic players in like Maryland, but I was graduating. I was going from high school to college.
You're the old man of the group.
In a way, yeah. And I'm seeing them, and they're still going. They're now they're passing me. You know, they're all getting to 2000 or whatever. Yeah. And it's not that I'm not playing. You know, I would be trying to play a lot whenever I could. Of course, when I started university, I had to play a bit less. You know, at that point, I was like, I can't play all the time. I still played a bit, because I was in Baltimore, so I could still play in some of the same sort of events that I've been playing, but with way less frequency. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking over my shoulder. I'm seeing that, yeah, almost all these guys were just passing me by, and clearly any type of confidence that I had from before was shot. And I had a lot of second guesses around that time. Like, if you want to talk about any time that I thought about quitting, like when I was early in college and about like 1800, it's not that I thought about quitting chess, but quitting like the goal, you know, quitting the pursuit of 2200. It's like, maybe it's just not going to happen because I don't know. I started a bit late relative to, I didn't really start that late, but I started late relative to everybody I know who's getting it. Plus now I'm at university and there's just all these other things. Like, it's just not working. I'm kind of stuck. And, but you know, there were some things that kept me going. So
what kept you going? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. You know, I don't want to mention like too many specific people while I'm doing this, but there's a person I feel is very relevant to my journey. There's a friend of mine who I met at university. I met him very early. His name is Sid. He's a national master from Massachusetts, and he was already a master at the time. So he was stronger than me, and we were in the same, we had our like dorm, we lived in the same sort of area. And he was already, you know, I was 1800, he was already over 2200, or maybe he was a bit below that, but he had been over 2200. And we just randomly met at chess club, and very quickly he became a good friend of mine. Just for no obvious reason, we just took to each other, and we played so many just blitz games, just all time, just playing a ton. And he was way better than me, obviously, but occasionally I would get a win, occasionally something would go my way, and he was very friendly to me, and it was fun playing him. And we had plenty of memory. It was something we played even outside on the tables when it was freezing cold for no prayer. I don't know why we did this. Like we played in a lot of different, you know, conditions. We played so many games against this guy. Yeah. And I learned a bunch from playing him that I didn't realize. Like I wasn't consciously learning it, but yeah. I was realizing like, okay, this is a plan. I've never seen this before. He had a kind of a weird style that I didn't really know a lot about. And it helped me in a way too, in a way that I didn't realize until a bit later, which is that I had a lot of, I guess you could say, like psychological issues when I'm playing against title players in tournament games or even experts. And this guy was clearly better than me, but I would also see him mess up because I played him a lot. I would see him make mistakes.
Yeah.
And it helped me realize that, like, you know, these guys are human. These aren't machines. I think everybody who becomes a title player has to have their moment when they realize that the title players, and I mean, I'm talking about national masters. Some people would talk about FIDE titles or grandmaster or whatever, but all these people are humans. You know, anybody who achieves a chess title is a human. They're going to make mistakes too. They're not gods. And that helped me a bit. He gave me sort of a human perspective of how it's possible to achieve the goal, even though he had already done it. I mean, he had done it when he was younger, but and gave me something to look forward to with regards to chess. Like I you know, I get to go to chess club and play chess and sometimes bug house with my friend, and that was something that kept me going a bit. And I wanted to be I still wanted to achieve my goal, and I could sort of see it in front of me. And that gave me motivation to keep playing. Nice. At times when I was in college, even after, I mean, after I even got above 1800, like there were definitely times in college where my chess goal was like the number one thing that got me up, you know, like that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Inspired me to, cause there were times when, you know, university can be tough. It was tough for me, in a lot of ways. You know, I was going to good school. It's just, sometimes I would be struggling to find even motivation to do stuff. It can be difficult. And then I would sort of think like, okay, you know, at least I can do today is if I get through the day, I can try to improve a little bit at chess somehow, you know, try to do something or try to play something, because maybe it's interesting when chess becomes the thing that you look forward to, that becomes the sort of escape. It can be inspiring in a way. It can push you. You don't always realize that. If you take chess for granted, it can be dangerous, but sometimes you get in situations where chess is the thing that you really want to do. That's powerful.
Yeah. It can be a powerful escape. At least it is for me, where it's like, I get to turn my phone off for several hours and you can send me all the texts you want. And I'm not the bad person who ignored you as at a chess tournament. You knew that.
Yeah, that's true.
So in this period, you're playing your friend a lot. It sounds like you're watching openings videos. Do you have like a structured approach to improvement, or are you just doing some stuff that seems interesting and fun?
So, I mean, I don't have like one structured thing, but there are a lot of random projects that I tried doing at various points. Like I would try to, I would change the way that I try to analyze my games. At some point, I tried to do a really deep analysis of some of my games, like beyond, I mean, I spent 7 hours analyzing one game to try to just annotate it as deeply as possible. And that was the sort of
Wow.
thing I did for a period of time. And then when I started, when I, at some point in college, I was like, okay, I do not have the time to do this. There's no way I can keep that up. But I would do a lot of things. I would try to work through different books. I would, there were different things. And but the problem was, I was the type of person, I would start one of those things and then I would 2 weeks later I forget about it. Like, oh wait, I'm on chapter three. Oh, I kind of forgot. What was chapter one about again? Like I just so I was really bad with that. But there were, yeah, there were a bunch of things that happened that eventually kind of increased my confidence over time. I mean, confidence was killed when I first started college, and then at a certain point I kind of realized, like, okay, you know, the chess journey that people have is, it's not a linear journey at all. I mean, there are going to be bumps everywhere. I just happen to be at one. You can definitely improve at chess without seeing it in your results immediately. Sometimes it takes a while to put together the things that you're learning. And between the 2 semesters of my year at college, I had there's a, you know, the period in the winter. And at Johns Hopkins, they have this sort of intersession where you can take a couple little classes, but they just count for like a credit or two. And so it's very chill. And I try to play a lot during that time. That was a few weeks long. And I try to play a bunch of tournaments, like sort of in the winter and maybe early spring before the semester really got underway. And finally at one of them in the Baltimore Open, I had a really good tournament and I got way above 1900 for the first time. So it took me more time. And more games too, to get from 1800 to 1900 than it took me to get from 1000 to 1800.
Gotcha. And you feel like it was just keep doing stuff, playing chess games, and then finally you had a breakthrough.
Yeah, there wasn't like one that I can't say that there was a super structured thing. Actually, the more structure I had to go into in some ways was when I got to about 2000 and I was stuck there for a bit. When I was that at that rating, which was later, which was when I was I guess 20, 21, that period of time, I had more of a maturity about me because I realized what it was like to be stuck and that it wouldn't kill me. And during that period of time, I think I started to structure the way that I studied more. I would do certain analysis projects with people, and we would try to work through something, and we would have different periods of time. Sometimes it would be like chess structures or something. Like we'd work through like certain books with some friends of mine, and we would have meetings from time to time, and we would do that. I would start just there were more structured things, but it was still a bit like I'm doing a lot of things I was doing before. Another thing is that at some point when I was in the 2000s, because that was my next plateau, you know. As in the 2000s, I realized like this jumping around from opening to opening thing is not, you know, like I gotta stop doing this. And I made a real effort to kind of, I guess the word is like codify or just sort of just set exactly what my repertoire was gonna be. You know, what am I gonna play? And something that I think helped me is that I did that work myself. I didn't get a repertoire. I didn't buy a book. I didn't have somebody else do it for me. And that meant that I really was looking for things that I understood and trying to figure out why, like I'm doing the work myself and it's very active learning. And that was a big project that I did. And then I stuck to it for a while. And eventually I made little tweaks to it. But when I made tweaks, it was not huge ones. I wasn't jumping like, okay, I've been playing this opening. Now I'm going to completely flip to do something else. If I wanted to make a change, I would take a little step. Because at that point, I kind of realized I was a bit older. I realized like some of the stuff I've been doing earlier was not that helpful for me.
Gotcha.
And I had more of a perspective.
So it
So
sounds
it
like,
did take more structure for that when I was in the 2000s. Yeah.
So when you hit that like 1900, it kind of sounds like two things happened. One was like you probably got your confidence back a bit that like, I can make progress. And then there's some maturity as well to know I'm probably going to hit another plateau at some point, and now I'm more ready for it than when you hit that first plateau after you're just like, you know, infinite ratings gain.
Yeah. I don't think I panicked when I was in the 2000s. I mean, I definitely had some very frustrating tournaments, of course. Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to get to a chess goal and you're playing a lot of tournaments, you're going to have some where you're questioning, like, what are you doing with your life? But that's normal. You're going to have, you get back to work, and it wasn't, I didn't have any like prolonged periods where I'm like, okay, I'm just, this isn't going to work. I had a realization about me. Like, I knew that it was going to take effort and it wasn't going to be easy, because I had sort of been through it. And it did. I mean, it was tough. I was stuck around high 1900s, low 2000s for quite a bit. But I mean, it didn't kill me, because I figured that it was possible for me to get better. It was at least possible for me to achieve my goal. And I understood that I had kind of gotten through one tough spot before, so it was possible to get through the next one. And I just had to keep working. And I also had an understanding that, you know, probably at the end of that time when I was like 1800, it's probably better than I was at the beginning. I just didn't really understand that, because I couldn't put together all the information in my mind. Yeah. I realized that you can improve without your rating going up necessarily. It can happen. You just have to put it all together. It can take time.
Yeah, for sure. So would you say that you first really felt like you could reach this goal when you got to that like high 1900s, early 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, I definitely remember when I broke 2000 too, which when I broke 2000 happened only a few months after I broke 1900, but then I quickly fell back. I mean, there was a new plateau area right there. But yeah. When I first hit 2000, I was like, yeah, I can see that this could happen. Mm-hmm. It's going to be tough, but I can see it. And that once you can see it, it's hard to give up on it.
Yeah.
Because you're describing earlier that you had a situation where you were 1700 and your goal is GM. You can't see GM from 1700.
No.
But you can see 2200 from 2000, because you can get results against 2200s. You can see, like, you know, I'm playing Sid sometimes when I'm at Hopkins, but decreasingly at that point because we're later in university, but still, and I can see that it's not a crazy jump. It's going to take a lot of work, but it's visible in the distance. That keeps you going. Yes. Now you have some idea what direction you're going. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So would you say, it sounded like you said already that the 2000 to 2200 was the most challenging part. Is that what you said? Or was it really the 1800 to 2000?
Hard to say. I mean, I think the 1800 to the getting over 1800 part was a challenge mentally. Because it was like, what is going on? I thought this thing was easy.
Right.
The getting past 2000 and propelling myself towards NM, that required more actual like work in a way.
Okay.
Because as I mentioned, I mean, there were a bunch of things that I actually tried to do, some projects. I didn't always 100% complete all of them, but there was way more structure.
Mm-hmm.
It was more of an effort, but it wasn't, I mean, I knew that it was going to be more of an effort. So it wasn't driving me crazy because I knew what I was signing up for.
Yeah.
There was one funny thing though. And I have to mention this. When I got over 2100 in 2019, I had a really good chess year in 2019. And one of the things that I think helped me a lot was kind of almost like a complete accident in a way, or very incidental. I did so much late 2018, early 2019. I did so much of the new feature that chess.com had come out at the time, which was the Puzzle Rush. And I was so jealous, because all my friends, who again are younger than me and better than me at the time, you know, they all got 40 really quickly in the first, you know, week or two. And I was stuck at 38 for so long. I did a ridiculous volume of quick tactics. And I'm not saying that's a great way to do it, per se, but I did such a huge volume out of pure jealousy. And eventually, I come to find out, I think that really helped my board vision. Because I think I stopped blundering I still blunder all the time, but I stopped making simple board vision based blunders at a certain point. And I really do think that doing a huge volume of that sort of thing, and eventually, I mean, I succeeded. I got to my 40 or whatever, and it seems so silly now, but you know, that was a real motivating factor, is that I wanted to have a certain number on my profile. Mm-hmm. And it was totally out of jealousy and out of whatever. But I look back at that year 2019, and I think the number one thing that I can see in my games, just when I look at tournaments, is I was the lines and like the eval graph of the game were way less squiggly, and like I wasn't making enormous mistakes as often because I was seeing the board a lot better. And another thing is, as I mentioned, I was sort of codifying my repertoire, so I was now gaining that kind of experience in the lines I was playing and building on the foundations. So yeah. I was playing sort of a more controlled game, a game where I had more of an idea what the plans were going to be. And then also I'm not missing as many simple things as I used to, because just out of pure jealousy, I did a ton of quick time, like ridiculous amount. And ever since then, that's always been something I've enjoyed. Like I've always liked these sort of quick thing. And on Lee Chess, they have the, you know, Storm and Racer, and I like Lee Chess. You know, Lee Chess is a great website, and I've done such a huge volume of that stuff because I just find it fun. But anything you could do a ton of volume of and that helps you, and that's useful. I try to do a lot of calculation too. I find that you have to keep those separate. I think calculation and pattern recognition are two clearly different categories. But there was definitely some room for improvement for me in pattern recognition. And I think that just incidentally, I kind of got a lot of that progress done just by chasing that, you know, silly goal I had.
Yeah, that's really fascinating, because I feel like I hear mixed reviews on Puzzle Rush. Like some people are like, yes, it really helps. And then some people are like, it's kind of bad for you because it compels you to make quick decisions and you're not really taking the position seriously. But it sounds like you were being very intentional about saying that's pattern recognition. And then I also have to do the deep thinking with calculation work.
Yeah. I think if you just say, okay, that's my tactics training. No, I don't like that, because that you need to also remind yourself that another thing you have to be able to do in a game is to be able to spend 15, 20 minutes solving a position. And that's calculation. And you can't do that in a puzzle, Storm or Racer or whatever. You don't have time. You have like 5 seconds. That's just about seeing an idea. If you, the calculation is also a huge thing, and you have to train yourself to be able to do that. That is something, there's no substitute for that. I just think that maybe there are people who are doing a huge volume of whatever the quick stuff, and then they're not doing calculation. They're not going to get as many gains in terms of tactical ability, because in a real tournament game, yeah, it's important to see the ideas that helped me. That helps you calculate faster in a way, but you also need to build the muscle to be able to calculate far and to be able to calculate accurately.
And what did you do to work on your calculation?
Yeah. So sometimes I'd be in calls with friends of mine. We would just be trying to solve really difficult puzzles and just not move the pieces and just, you know, stuff like that. That definitely helped me. Later on when I was an expert, something funny I would do, sometimes I would just go and I would have my phone with me and I would just go somewhere like in the woods or something, somewhere I could be alone and just sit outside and just find a really tough chess puzzle and just sit there for like a long time. Just try to solve it. Just think. And there's a usefulness to that as opposed to trading with friends, because then you can do kind of things at your own speed. I like both. I like being able to do both, because if you're doing stuff with friends, you can get new ideas. You can see kind of where they are in relation to you. But if also you're doing things on your own, then that it's a challenge, because you have to try to almost be the dissenting voice to yourself. Mm-hmm. You force yourself to ask all the questions and, you know, just, I mean, I would just try to do a lot of difficult calculation puzzles as well, because I knew I was doing a ton of volume of the other stuff, whether it was intentional or not. Yeah. I didn't want to have like a huge imbalance there where I could see patterns, but I couldn't calculate. I wanted to try to have my calculation catch up. I would never say that deep calculation was like a strength of mine, whereas I would say pattern recognition became one, but I do think that I improved it. I do think I did. Because I think at some point it was a weakness, and I think it became like good enough at a certain point.
Yeah, I'm a little bit curious. It sounds like you put a ton of volume into the pattern recognition, you're working on your openings, you're doing calculation. How much time are you able to find for chess, like in a day or a week?
Well, this would have been the period. So we're talking about when I was in the expert range, right?
Yeah.
So this would have been late in, well, actually, yeah, let's just talk about the timeline. Cause this is important. In my senior year of college, and I broke 2100 in the summer between junior and senior year of college. Cause in the summer, that's when you get to play a ton of chess, you know, during the summer, that period of time, get to play a ton of chess. Didn't get to play a lot of chess during the actual year, but I was over 2100, feeling good about my chess. Like, okay, this is an achievable goal.
Yeah.
And then early in 2020, I had some really good results. Played at the Chesapeake Open, did very well, didn't lose any games, won some money. I was playing the, what is it, under 2200 section, and I had a very good tournament. Then I played the Baltimore Open. Very first round, got off to a good start because I drew Justin Sarkar, who at the time was like 2490. That was the highest player I drew. Later in the tournament, I got my highest rated win as well, over a player in the 2300s. That was just, you know, and then I'm zooming up and doing great. And then and I got all the way to 2171.
Yeah, I'm looking at this. You must have been like, I got it.
At that point, the world decided to kind of go on a pause. That was just great.
No.
Yeah. So I got to 2171, and then the world kind of decided to go to intermission.
Do you feel like you could have had it right there if the pandemic hadn't happened?
Maybe. Hard to say though. It's interesting. When the pandemic started, I immediately had kind of a fear about the chess situation, and I think it was a justified one in some ways. Like, I think I was kind of right about this. I was wrong about many other things that I thought at various times in my chess life, and I talked about them before. This one, I think I was onto something. I thought, I'm going to have a problem here, because if there isn't a lot of chess for a while, and we all come back, then what's going to happen is that a lot of people are going to become super underrated playing on the internet.
Yeah.
And it's going to be primarily really young players. Mm-hmm. And we've already got, you know, young players who are gaining a ton of points all the time. And now it's going to be way worse. And I was terrified, because I'm thinking, okay, even if maybe I'm the strength I'm going for now, but I'm going to have to improve to get to my goal. I might have to improve more now, because there are going to be so many underrated players beneath me. And I think I was mostly right about that. Because if you look at what's happened, I mean, you see so many people who are so underrated, where their rating has nothing to do with their strength.
Yeah.
And that was a fear I had. And that kind of pushed me in some ways to at least try to do some chess, even when it was like, when there's nothing happening, when there's nobody has any energy, I would try to push myself, because I'm like, I have to be better. I have to be more underrated than the people I'm facing, in a way. I got to keep working. So it was a motivating factor, but it was also a fear.
Right. So you worked really hard during the pandemic, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I tried to. I mean, there were times when the motivation was tough, though, because then you question when you're even going to be able to play. And there were times, but it was also, I mean, people had more time. And so you could talk to people online. You could set up analysis sessions or whatever. The other thing that happened was, I mean, I just got lucky. I mean, I graduated in 2020, but that's the COVID year. I didn't have anything super like immediately lined up to do. And I just, you know, just out of the blue, I got offered to start teaching some online chess classes. And slowly but surely over the months and you know, after that became my thing, kind of. I didn't have something immediately lined up. And I began like doing a lot of chess all the time, because I was just teaching chess. Now, did that help my chess? I don't really know, because it was at a different level from what I was studying. But, you know, I couldn't forget the game.
Yeah.
It was with me all the time. So it just happened in an interesting way. But that was my fear. You know, I was afraid that there were going to be so many people who were underrated and scary, and I was going to get left behind. So it pushed me to keep working a bit.
Mm-hmm. So then it looks like after the pandemic, you get to play in June and you gain 15 more points
in my first tournament back. But then take a look at the next two, though.
Yeah, I see it was not smooth sailing to 2200.
Yeah, we got to talk about that.
Yeah, so what were your thoughts then? You hit 2186. Were you like, one more tournament, boom, I'm going to be there?
Yeah, so that was a really interesting time. So that was summer 2021, and I have to preface this by saying that during that period of my life, just earlier in the summer, some difficult circumstances had happened in my life. Like someone close to me went through a tough time and then passed away, and I had a you know, front row seat to that entire thing, and it was tough.
Yeah.
And that was happening sort of concurrently with that, so immediately that part of my mind is not in it, because then you're thinking like there are sometimes there are more important things than chess.
Yeah,
chess is not everything. And that first tournament, things went very well, kind of luckily. I don't think I played that great, but it went okay, and it was kind of an escape, and I did well, and I'm encouraged. But once I got to 2186, the other thing is, in addition to all these other things I'm thinking about, because again, my mind is not 100% on chess at that point. But in addition to that, now every tournament you're thinking about it.
Yeah, right.
And I go and play in the World Open, and my very first game I played some young 2400, maybe 2350, some young strong player, and it was not a game, because at the beginning of the game I just wasn't paying attention. I mixed up my prep, which is something that I almost never do. I mean, I take pride in knowing my stuff, and I mixed up something, and he got like the easiest win ever. He must have thought I was like, what is this guy doing in this section? It was probably easiest win that he got in years. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, really easy victory, because I just immediately lost a bunch of material within the first 15 moves, because I forgot what I was supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
And my mind is on several other things, but I'm thinking about the title, and I'm not thinking about the game very well. The rest of the tournament was a series of disasters. I won one game, but everything else was just really brutal. I had wins turn into draws. I had draws turn into losses left and right at that tournament. The next tournament, the Pittsburgh Open, was somehow worse.
Before we move on, I got to ask this question. So you're paired up with this person who, are you even thinking like, if I win this game, I can drop and be master? Like, is that how you're going into round one?
I mean, I don't think that I ever, I think I at least had enough perspective to not make a plan for that. Like, at least I think I at least had enough maturity to say, let me deal with that if it happens. I think at least I probably thought that, but I'm sure that the thought of what happens if I win the first couple rounds, and then very quickly after round three, because round three, I also blew a good position and lost in a game I should not have lost. Opponent played well, but I mean, I just, after another disaster round three, I realized, okay, this is not going to happen. I just have to try to play well and get out of this. And then I couldn't even do that because it just struggling. There's just too many thoughts happening. I actually did something I almost never do, which is after round seven, I withdrew from the tournament, and I stayed there the last day, and I hung out with my friends. I played a lot of Bug House, and I got to talk to a lot of people, and made me feel a little bit better.
Sounds fun.
And the funny thing is, the next 2 years, I didn't play in the World Open, but I was still there. I was just hanging out, because I realized that, like, this is the life, you know? But but that was a tough one. And then the next one was even worse.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the next one was so frustrating.
So it looks like you went all the way down to 2149. When you hit that point, were you still like, listen, this doesn't matter, I'm gonna hit master, it's a matter of time? Or were you starting to be like, oh no, oh my goodness, everyone's gotten too strong, I've fallen behind because of
the pandemic? For sure. I mean, when I played the Pittsburgh Open, I mean, I had two consecutive games in rounds two and three where I played much lower rated players in the 1900 2000 range, and I drew one because I literally had a pass pawn that was close to promoting, and I just forgot about it. I just blundered it. It was the dumbest thing. I couldn't believe it. I was like, I can't believe I just made this stupid move. The next game, though, I'm down a pawn because of some other stupid stuff, but there's still many pieces on the board. I thought I'm playing a lower rated opponent. They played so well and converted like there was nothing. And it was a really long game, and they took care of their business. And that's when that was like a rock bottom of sorts, that tournament. Not even the tournament after that. The next tournament, the Waldorf, I mean, that was tough. But the Pittsburgh Open, after that day of the Pittsburgh Open, after round three, I was like, okay, I don't think that I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this, maybe, because even though it's within sight, I'm going down. Everyone's underrated. And even when I play well, some disaster invariably happens to me, like happened in my round two game. Like something's going to go wrong and I'm going to screw it up because I have no confidence. So this is just not going to happen. I had those thoughts. The next day, though, and I always feel like I play well at the end of events. That's something I always pride myself in, is I feel like I do have good stamina, at least. I like to last rounds of tournaments, sometimes people run out of energy. I always feel like I have a little bit left. So, you know, sometimes I have good results. I won both of my games, and they're both against very young players who were pretty good. And I won both of those games, and those games went fine. And that did a little bit to remind me, like, okay, I'm not in terrible shape. I'm not in good shape, but I'm not in terrible shape.
Maybe I'm okay. Okay, well, that's good. And it looks like, I don't know, it took you quite a while, but you're starting to make some like slow gains. That must have felt good.
Yeah, my approach changed a bit because I realized also something else was that I realized I felt I was harming myself by trying to get to NM or get close to NM by playing like huge open tournaments that were not close to me. I was making things like almost a production. When you go and you play in some big open tournament and you have to pay hundreds of dollars to play there and stay at the hotel and all these things, it's another stressor. Yeah. And I kind of decided, like, after that Pittsburgh Open, even though I won the last two games, I thought, you know, this is not the way, at least for the moment, because this is such a stressful thing. And it's not exactly back in my back here. I know you just talked to Megan recently, who flies all over the place to play in all kinds of tournaments, but it's still, you know, it was a 4.5 hour drive or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's still, I still had to stay at the hotel and pay that it's expensive, very expensive to play in. And I had the thought, you know, this is too much. There's too much stuff happening here. I want to put myself in a situation where I'm going to focus on playing events I'm comfortable with that, like, let's say I'm not feeling good about it the morning of, I can say, you know what, maybe I'm not going to play today. I'm going to make sure I get good sleep, make sure I'm playing relatively locally, not going to put too much pressure on myself, because there's already so much pressure on myself. Like, I don't need to add anything more. I think that approach helped a bit because it made me not lose my mind as much.
Yeah, you know? That really resonates with me because, like, I have a family, and so anytime I play, it's a production. So, like, the great tournament that caused my recent disastrous run, I will remember the morning of, it was in April this year, and I was like, I'm feeling really sick, but my family has carved out this time and said, you can do this. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway, even though I'm feeling terrible. I'm going to plow through and it'll be fine. And it wasn't. I lost three games and it was
the start of a terrible run. Yeah, no, I wanted to put myself in a situation where I could decide that I wanted to play in something because I was feeling in good shape to play it. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to say I'm going to pay, you know, $600 to go 4 hours away and play in something where I'm playing people that I've never heard of before. Like, I want to have a little bit more of a concept of what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And that helped a bit.
Like, yeah. It's all Maryland, DC, and it's all gaining points.
Yeah. I mean, until I got to the 2190s, there were some issues there, but I had the DC championship was when it was when I really got very close. Then I just had a tournament where everything went right. Like, I won that tournament with 4 out of 4 and everything sort of clicked. I didn't play perfectly, but I got all the things seemed to sort of bounce my way somehow or another. And I mean, the only game that I really could have lost in round two, I blundered a pawn, but it was the position stayed against a very young, talented player. Position stayed complicated, and somehow it was a marathon game, and I ended up winning. And at that moment, I felt it inspires. You were talking earlier about the positive reinforcement. You realize how much effort you have to put in to win games, and inspires you the next day. Like, I can see the results when I put in that much effort.
Yeah.
And the next day went great. So I'm in the 2190s. There were some glitches that happened in the 2190s. That wasn't smooth sailing, but
I got to ask you about this tournament on January 15th, 2022. You go in 2192, you leave 2199.
Yeah, no, that's a big one. So I'm playing in this quads event, and I show up that day. I mean, I had plenty of other situations before the previous couple of tournaments where I've been kind of close to making it and something or other had been just a bit off or whatever. But I thought that might be my chance. I take a look at who's in the top section and I'm thinking, okay, I don't know. I don't know if this is going to happen. Mm. Doesn't seem like it's going to happen, but maybe it will. I don't know. I'm just going to try to play games. And if it happens, it happens. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I feel like I played really well that day. I faced three people. I knew all of them. One of them was a much older player. I played a bunch. Another was a player who's a bit older than me who I'd played a bunch already as well. And the third one was a young kid who's very talented. And in none of the games I had any problems. I played very, very well. I took care of my stuff. And the last game in particular was really crazy. There were a lot of tactics that happened, and I felt I won in pretty cool style. And I remember at that moment I thought, okay, I don't know if this is it. If this is it, that was pretty cool. But all I know is I just left it all out on the board. Like I did everything I could, and we'll figure it out. Now the organizer of that tournament is a great dude, and he knew how close I was.
Right.
And he sent me a message that night. He said, you know, Dennis, I don't think I'm going to be able to rate this thing tonight because we're having a problem with some USCF membership. I'm going, oh, geez. It didn't get rated for like 2 or 3 days. And I know it's not this guy's fault.
Yeah.
He's a good TD. And he was so nice to me. And he knew exactly what I was going through. And come to find out a few days later, okay, it's 2199.28, I think. Okay, great. And there was a pressure, there was a time pressure too in this, because I really wanted to get that. Once I got very close, when they got to the 2190s, I thought I really want to make it before Amateur Team East. That's the one tournament that I really play in that's 100% for fun.
Yeah,
I just want to be able to go and have fun at that tournament.
Right.
And I don't want to have this hanging over me. And that kind of caused me to, I the next tournament, I since I was so close, I played, I entered a tournament. That wasn't too far away, but I mean, I entered a tournament, I played a game against the 1700, I won, and then I went to the TD that tournament, Chase Waters, and I asked, okay, nobody's going to be getting buys, like how many people are in this tournament, you know, even number, whatever, what's going on? And I figured out, I checked, and then I said, okay, is it okay if I leave then? And he sort of smiled because he knew, because
yeah, I didn't know
about this, but he knew, I guess he had done his research during the round or something.
Yeah.
And he was like, it's okay. And in some ways I regret that, but I understand it in the context of the time, because I knew that I didn't want to have that hanging over me when I played Amateur Team East.
And I mean, to me it looks like such a smart decision. You need 1 point, you win the game, you get the point, goal achieved. This is what you've been working for years. Why would you not?
You know, but it's funny. I didn't feel it did impact the way that I felt. I think you will never be able to predict how you're going to feel until you're actually in the moment. People all the time will say, and this applies to anything, not just making NM, it applies to anything that's a really big goal that you only achieve once in life.
Mm-hmm.
You never know how you're going to feel until it actually happens. You can have an idea of how you might feel, but you could be totally wrong.
Yeah.
And I actually became kind of sad at some points, because there was some real like imposter syndrome there. Cause I'm thinking like, okay, I mean, I got 2199. I played this game. I got to 2200. Then I played Amateur Team East. Somehow my rating went exactly 2200 to 2200. Don't know how that happened. Makes it look like I'm at my floor, but anyway, I didn't play for a bit. I'm coaching and I'm kind of, it didn't feel right. Until finally at the beginning of this year, I played a tournament and it went really well. And then I was like, okay, I played the Dewey Beach Open, and the previous year I had played it and I lost in the last round on board one to Tom Bartel. I don't know if you know that is an IM from that sort of area, from I think Pennsylvania. And this particular year Bartel wasn't playing.
Oh.
And he told me that he wasn't playing a few days before the tournament. He's like, okay, I'm not playing, so it's you know. And he was right, and it went really well. And when that tournament happened, that's when I felt like, I achieved my goal. Like that was the moment, and that was one of the best feelings actually. And it wasn't a super strong field, I know, but I just need it for me.
Yeah, that's so fascinating that you hit master, and it's not until a year later when you actually feel like a true master.
Yeah, because I mean, I had been, I still didn't have a whole lot of confidence about what I had achieved, or if I had achieved anything. It just, it sort of the way that it happened took some value out of it. But then I go and I play this tournament in January, and it was just perfect. I actually did a little vlog of it. Somebody can find it if they want. Find the Chess Two Fists on YouTube. They can view it. But it went just perfectly. I never had 5 out of 5 in any other tournament I ever played in my life. And even though I there were no other masters in the tournament, but even despite that, it was a really nice feeling because it validated sort of something to me.
Yeah.
I think everybody needs that. We're all wrapped up in the pursuit of a rating because the chess titles are often based on getting a certain rating. At some point, you got to remember that there's another thing in chess, which is you have a goal. You're trying to do as well as you can in the game. Yeah. And you can forget about winning games and about what it feels like to win a game or a tournament. And that was a nice moment for sure.
Nice. Well, we're pretty much out of time, but I still have to ask one question.
Yeah, so what's up?
Since getting master in January 2022, you really have only played a couple tournaments and none since February 20th. So are you just kind of like in the retirement phase of your journey at master? You're like, I'm done with chess. Like, where are we at here?
Well, we've been in a weird sort of phase of my life because I've lived for many years in Maryland, but now just as of the last month and change, I've been in Charlotte doing some work with the Chess Center here. So I've been focusing on life. I've been trying to figure out, what my situation is, not in terms of me playing chess, but in terms of just the other areas of my life. I've been working so hard on the chess of other people in this year. I haven't had a ton of time to work on my own chess again. That time will come though. Okay. I always say that it's important for me to remember. I got to play. I when I'm playing in a tournament, I sometimes remember to remind myself, don't forget to have fun. And now that I've gotten to 2200, I feel like I can have fun again, kind of, because it's not stressful. And so now if I want to play something, I'll play it because I want to play it and because I'm ready to play it. And because I'm definitely going to play some more tournaments. There's no question about it.
Nice.
But I've also been focusing on my life for a bit.
So any goals left, or have you achieved everything you wanted in chess?
Well, I definitely don't have any big goal that I'm going to be striving for, because I know how hard it was for me to get to 2200 and how stressful it was in some ways, and it was worth it, but it was also, it's the sort of experience that I'm okay with that being the most that I achieve. If I achieve more, that's cool. But I'm not gonna put any new goal, okay, I want to achieve this, because I want to be able to play chess and have fun playing chess and play chess because I want to play it, and not because I want to get to some number, which I've been guilty of sometimes. I've been guilty of thinking, even when I was making back in the day, when I was first jumping to 1800, I'm playing this event because I want to break 1600 this weekend, things like that. I've got to make sure that I remember that chess is a game. Because chess is a board game at the end of the day, and we get to play it. We get to play chess. It's a fun thing.
Nice. What a great way to wrap up. Well, Dennis, thanks so much for sharing your remarkable journey from beginner to 2200, doing much of it as an adult, or at least the hardest part of it. It's so hard for me because I feel like I'm trying to do the same thing. I got to like 1700 and then I picked it back up. The difference is though, like, it's not going that well for me, Dennis. So hopefully I can right the ship here.
The one thing I will say is I never had a period of time ever since I was 1000 where I sort of let go at all. I never had any gaps of playing or at least studying a lot. So that's another thing I don't have a lot of experience in, really, is what do you do when you've spent a lot of time away from the game and then you're coming back and you're already an experienced player and you have a goal? That's something that maybe I should ask other people about what that's like, because who knows? Maybe someday that'll be me, or I'll work with students who are like that, and I'll have to think about the differences between a path when you've played a lot of tournaments and they've been spaced out over a long period of time, or when you've taken a big break.
Yeah. But and it's tough because after a 20-year break with the tools being so much more advanced, right? It's like I come back and I may have the similar skills that I had when I left, but that rating means nothing compared to what that rating is today.
Got to be a different world. Yeah. I mean, I've seen the chess world change even in just the decade and change that I've been playing in. If you've been gone, if you were gone for a 20-year period, I can't imagine. That's got to be night and day.
Yeah. It was like, Kramnik's still world champion, right? No, no, no. Kramnik's not world champion anymore, man. You missed some stuff in there. There's this new guy, Magnus something. All right. Well, Dennis, thanks so much for sharing your journey. Quite a story. For those of you out there, if you're stuck at a rating, don't worry. Dennis was stuck at a rating forever. What he's done is guaranteed that you too will make master. All right. Well, maybe it's going to take a little while. But come back next week. We'll have some more guests, some more inspiration, and I'll see you next time, everybody.